You have questions, we have answers. This is Jane Muller.
And this is Ken Muller. Welcome to our show, All About Real Estate with Ken and Jane. Today, it's a time of year to talk about tax implications as the tax season is fast approaching.
Absolutely. You'll probably get your the tax paperwork from the work now.
So we're going to give some general guidance on some of the tax issues and also how real estate factors into it, whether you sold a principal resident or you have investment properties. And to break it all down, with us today, we have as our guest Mr. A.J. Kumar. He's a certified public accountant with Sai CPA Services. A.J., welcome
to
our show.
Thank you, Jane. I appreciate the opportunity. I'm looking forward to the show.
Very good. So please tell us about your firm and the services you provide.
Absolutely. So we have been in the CPA, the tax accounting business, for a little over 23 years now. We have three locations, about 84 employees. When I say 84 employees, when it comes to small-time accounting practices, we are one of the bigger ones.
Yes, I know.
We have 20-plus CPAs, CVAs, our valuation expert, CAs, CMAs, management accountants. I'm a CPA, MBA in finance, Series 7, Series 66, and a CVA, valuation expert myself. So we have been doing it for quite some time. We have a lot of clients in the real estate area. And this show is very opportune in time. Before the year end, there are certain things that people can do to make a difference to their tax liability.
For sure, right. And I have to say, AJ, you're always so informative, and you give a free educational seminars, which every time I go, I learn something new about the tax code. You know,
absolutely,
it's very entertaining, very educational, but also a lot of fun.
Yes, thank you.
Wonderful.
Yeah. So let's talk about the real estate first, then we can focus on other things, time permitted. Let's say with the principal residence, can you go over the tax code allowance if somebody sells their principal residence and the capital gain that you're allowed to take tax-free, assuming you meet the criteria?
Absolutely. So for a principal residence, the first $250,000 per spouse, so if you are doing married filing joint tax return, your first $500,000 of capital gain is not taxed. So take an example. You bought a home for, let's say, $300,000. You are selling it for $700,000. How much capital gain you have to pay? Zero, because it's a married filing joint tax return. In this example, your capital gain is $400,000, which is less than $500,000, because it's $250,000 per spouse. If you are doing married filing separate, or if you are single or divorced, then the limit is $250,000. I would add that you have to be staying in this house for at least 2 years in the last 5 years in order to qualify for this rule. Mm-hmm. This 2 years doesn't have to be consecutive, meaning you can be staying in 1 year, then you moved out to a different state, then you came back, stayed in here for another year or so. So you can still qualify for it. But the rule is you have to be staying in that premise, in that primary home, for at least 2 years in the last 5 years. The question we are asked, Ken, how do I justify that I have been living in this house for last n number of years? How do I prove it?
Mm-hmm.
So you have to look at it on a substance basis, on a wholesome basis. Is your driver license address is this address? On your tax return that you filed, did you use this address as your mailing address? Did you spend more than 183 days in this address? Do you have a local job that you can support, that I stay here, I go to this job? Meaning, if you have been staying in Florida, even though you are using this address as a mailing address, that does not qualify. So you have to be a little bit careful about it.
Sure.
And how do you prove, how do you justify that you have been living in this primary home for at least 2 years in the last 5 years to get this capital gain exclusion?
Right. For it to qualify as your principal residence, I would think the driver's license and, like you said, 183 days domiciled there, you really have to, it really has to be your principal residence.
Absolutely.
It can't
absolutely
be a secondary home, and you have to have proofs, right? Because the IRS challenges you. If you don't have the proofs, I think you mentioned that if you get audited, it's not fun, because once you're on the audit list, then you could be subject to, you know, re-audits every.
You're 100% right. So audit is not fun. And we do a lot of audit support, audit help for a lot of clients. We pick up more clients because they are being audited, as opposed to the other way around. So audit is not stressful only. I mean, it creates certain stress. It doesn't finish in a day. A typical audit can last 3 months, 6 months, a year.
Mm.
Accountants or the attorneys will charge them absurd amount of money to support them for the audit. Not just the stress, it costs money. So why go in an area where you absolutely don't have to? Peace of mind is better.
I agree. Yeah, that's how I feel.
Yes, a lot of time, right? People try to take a shortcut, right?
I don't
think it's
worth.
Just be honest. Do
absolutely.
Whatever you should. And my mom used to say, when we get married, right, my mom said, my husband's like my father. It doesn't matter who knock on the door. He had nothing to do with, you know, it has to be good, nothing bad, because my husband will never go anywhere in a gray area.
Yeah, especially with accounting, too. I'm very careful with anything. I just don't want to take any risk or anything. I always want to err on the side of being conservative.
Like my dad.
Yeah, you have to. Yeah, some people really try to push the envelope with what they can claim.
I see it every day, how many people get caught. Mm. I see every day how many people get audited. And more I see these audits, more I see people getting caught, more I know that it's not worth it.
Yeah, it's not worth it. I mean, why to be leaving the... I mean, obviously, what the code allowed and you claim, that's
of
what
course,
the code allowed.
100%.
But if you knew that's not right and not worth to push the envelope, because the end of the day, it's like a can, and you said a peace of mind is for... life, right? Enjoying your life, you want to be peace of mind. So,
information is the power. The key is you need to know. Let's say if you're watching or if you're listening to this show, if you're watching this show, then you know for the first half a million, you don't have to worry about it.
Yes.
Mm. If the gain is, let's say, 550,000, it's not a big deal. You can choose to pay taxes on $50,000 or you can show the improvements that you have done.
That was leading to my question. I want you to talk about that, because even if you're over the quote-unquote 500,000, I mean, if you've lived in the house for 20, 30 years, you can step up your basis but you can talk about the things that could qualify for you to reduce your basis and hence come within that 500,000, like home improvements, which can add up.
Absolutely. So maintenance is not improvement by definition. So let's say if you fixed the plumbing or the toilet is not flushing and you called the plumber, gave $200, mm-hmm. that's not home improvement.
Right.
But let's say if you changed the carpet to wooden flooring and it costed you $15,000, or if you created a separate room, a Florida room, or if you created a separate porch outside the house, all those things are improvement that sort of adds value to the home. Mm-hmm. If you can maintain proper receipts around it, and again, the onus, the responsibility remains on the taxpayer.
Mm-hmm.
You can't really say, well, think about it. It did not happen automatically. Look at the pictures. It was carpet, now it's wooden. I must have paid for it. That doesn't work.
Right.
That doesn't count. You have to have the proper receipts and proof of payment. In one case, we were going through an audit situation. This client had a lot of receipts. But there was no proof of payment. He was paying in cash to these contractors. So he couldn't produce the proof of payment.
So even though the address for the receipt had like his address, 123 Main Street, the IRS is not going to presume that because he was living there during that period, which he can show from his tax records,
right.
That wasn't enough to
if
prove.
If you think about it, I can give you whatever receipt you want. I can give you a tax preparation receipt for $600. I can give you a tax preparation receipt for $6,000 or $16,000. Unless you show me that what did you pay actually? The receipt by itself doesn't...
Right, so that's why it's a good idea. And what I always do is when I get a receipt, I always put paid on the date and the Bank of America or Chase check number.
100%.
So I don't necessarily keep a copy of the check, but I can know that if ever you have to get audited and you go back, they can go back on the bank records
Very good practice. So you know exactly where to look for.
If you
ever have to find the proof of payment. But what we want our audience to understand, it's not just the receipt. Saving the receipt only wouldn't cut it.
Mm.
But if the people, if I pay, like in your instance, right, if I put a wooden floor like 20 years ago, maybe it cost me $1,000 per room, right, that time, now it's probably $10,000. So if I paid and they give a receipt, say paid in full, it's still no good?
It wouldn't matter, because I can give you a receipt and say paid in full for $600, $6,000. $600,000 paid in full is written by hand. You could write paid in full. I would never know who wrote paid in full. You can buy a stamp for $5 which says paid in full. You put the stamp paid in full and put some date around it.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, that does not create the foolproof method. So the rule is you have to have the receipt and the proof of payment. If you don't have the receipt and you have the proof of payment, I'll still take it. If you say that I paid through my Bank of America $7,233 to hardwood flooring, and here is the receipt, I want to see that the problem is, I want to see where actually did this repair happen.
Because it could have been paid for...
It could have been paid for somebody else. It could have been paid for my sister-in-law, my brother-in-law, my mother-in-law. That does not mean this wood flooring was done at my house. That's why the receipt is important. But I have seen various cases, depending on the auditors, as long as you have proof of payment, a lot of time they are kind enough to accept it. But not having the proof of payment, just having the receipt.
It just isn't very, not going to cut it, yeah. Yeah, that's really interesting. And also, you mentioned that you don't have to live in the house for two consecutive years. That's something I wasn't aware of. That I thought it was two of the last. So that's something I learned something new during our conversation
now.
Yeah.
So a lot of times, especially in the expat, we see a lot of people living in the house. Then they are transferred to a different state, different country for some time. Then they come back. After some time. And after a year or two, year and a half, they are selling the house. We don't really give them hard time. As long as you can justify why you were out, where were you, and how long you stayed here, and you have sort of a proof around it, as long as you can justify you have been there for 2 years.
Is it two calendar years, or just, or it can be like from June 15th
to June 2 years means
any period of 365
731 days.
In total, out of the last 5 years.
Right.
Yeah.
So we don't really say the two full calendar year. 2 years means it could be June 1st to... next year, May 31st, is 1 year from us.
I learned that today from you, too. Just think about it, Ken. If somebody bought a house, say, close to, you know, February 1st, right, and they live there for almost a year, and they got posted overseas for a project for 6 months or a year and a half, they come back, they live here for another year and a bit. So total, they in there in the house is more than 2 years.
Yep.
And then they got another job. They need to, this time,
I think
the market is high.
So it makes sense that the code allows that. Yeah. It doesn't.
Right.
It's fair.
I think the code, and a lot of people question me this thing, that why IRS is doing it. This is not fair. And I tell them that this code has been around for over 200 years. A lot of people try to cheat. A lot of people got creative. So the code got restrictive in the sense to avoid the misuse, but the intent behind the code is to keep it fair for everyone.
Yes, yes.
Yes. Okay, very good. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back after the...
Seize the opportunity to lease a spacious building with private parking located in bustling downtown Jamesburg, Zone Commercial Business District, or CBD. This permitted use includes retail, office, medical, restaurant, hotels, and personal service establishments, and much more. To find out more, call Ken at 732-322-2908. That's 732-322-2908. Prime office space on Route 18 is available for lease. This versatile layout features private offices, conference rooms, and workstations, with options to lease from 500 square feet to 2,800 square feet. Ideal for lawyers, accountants, and any professional service provider. Convenience extends beyond the premises with quick and direct access to major highways, including the New Jersey Turnpike, Route 1 and Route 130. To find out more, contact Ken at 732-322-2908.
You've got the questions. They've got the answers. It's All About Real Estate with Ken and Jane Muller. Now let's get back out to our hosts, Ken and Jane.
Okay, welcome back to our show. We're joined today with AJ Kumar, a certified public accountant with Sci CPA Services. And AJ, please share your phone number for our listeners.
Absolutely, Ken. Thank you. My phone number is 908-380-6876. Again, this is 908-380-6876.
Okay, thank you. So let's continue our discussion on the principal residence tax exemption. And we were talking about capital improvements, about what constitutes a capital improvement. I have a question. What about if you replace the windows? Does that
absolutely
count? That does count.
It does. And everything has a caveat to it. Everything has new information around it. So just remember, let's say if you invest $10,000 mm-hmm. in upgrading the windows or replacing the windows, and based on the $10,000, you get some tax credit. I mean, this is an energy efficient window, mm-hmm. and now you have some tax credit around it. The tax credit, again, can be 30%. Or up to $3,200 for the energy efficiency and $2,000 for the boiler and other things. Mm-hmm. So in this case, let's say if you got $1,200 back from the government as a tax credit, your actual out-of-pocket expense is $8,800.
Okay.
So your improvement should count as $8,800, not $10,000.
Gotcha. You've got to minus out the credit you get back. Otherwise, you
so
can't,
let's
be,
say
can't
if you
double
have a reimbursement.
Yeah.
Or the window guy says, buy four, get one free. So at the end of the day, you are calculating what's your total out-of-pocket expenses.
Yes.
That's your improvement.
That makes sense, yeah.
You know what? Now I remember we did a very efficient, energy-efficient window for our house and also the new roof. We never claimed a tax. We didn't even think about it. We didn't.
A lot of people miss that, especially with the insulation, especially with the water heater.
Oh, with the furnace, you can also claim it. That's
yes.
what I learned from AJ's
right.
last seminar. Yeah. You can, for a new furnace, they give you it. You can claim
boiler,
a
furnace. Yeah. There are a lot of credits around it. I mean,
we didn't know that time. We did a roof and a window, yeah. the big, big ticket.
People talk about electric vehicle credit. People talk
right.
about solar credit. A lot of people don't really know that there are
yeah.
other credits in the home.
The home itself.
Uh-huh. The home improvement in the home itself, putting the insulation, putting the, yeah. the new water heater, new boiler, mm. that they can claim. I mean, penny is penny. The way I see it, what's yeah. legally you are allowed, you should not miss it. See, the onus remains on the taxpayer. If you pay more than what you should have paid, the government is not coming back to you to say, hey, Ken, you paid $5 more. Here is
right.
your-
But
if you pay less,
they, won't
they are happy to send you a notice. They are happy
yeah.
to send you interest and penalties.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So as much
but
as in the first section, we were advocating, don't
yeah.
go in the gray area, do the right thing. It's not worth mm-hmm. the risk. But at the same time, information is the key. Whatever you deserve, whatever is legally allowed,
yeah.
you
mm-hmm.
should take advantage of it.
Mm-hmm. We didn't do sure. because our siding was energy efficient.
Yeah.
Our windows energy efficient. Our roof, I don't know any efficient, but
yeah.
a very good roof. So our utility bill is as
you can also claim a new roof as a capital improvement to, for
100%.
Your basis, even
yes.
though it's a necessity. So it's
yeah.
not
but
like,
it,
but it's but it's something that
yeah,
yeah.
See, you bought the house for $300,000 and
yeah.
now. After year, 2 years, 5 years, you invested another $20,000. Roof is expensive.
Oh,
now.
Sure.
So $20,000.
Yeah.
Yeah. It actually costed you some substantial amount of money. The $300,000 that you paid,
yeah.
that roof was 25 years old.
Mm-hmm.
If that roof was new, so in theory, instead of $300,000, you probably would have paid $315,000.
Mm-hmm.
So we still see it as an improvement. So
sure.
if you can maintain those receipts,
mm-hmm.
again, the receipts and
yeah.
the proof of payment, and I'm
yeah.
a big advocate, as much as you want to save taxes, as much as you want to hire the handyman, please try to pay as much as possible in check, Zelle, Venmo,
mm-hmm.
where you have some sort of proof of payment around it.
Right.
Oh, yeah, now it's Zelle.
That's right.
Yeah, a lot of your bank account, you can see.
Yeah,
right.
you can
right.
trace it on the bank, yeah.
yeah.
Whereas
yeah.
cash, there's no traceability, so it's kind of,
yeah,
yeah you're really
right.
tough to prove it, for sure.
Yeah, especially
yeah.
for the big ticket. Better keep the
right.
the payment receipt.
Right. Yeah. So let's say somebody exceeds, if you sell a principal residence, let's say they exceed that $500,000 in capital gain, and let's say their tax implications, what is the taxability on the excess amount over the $500,000, assuming a married couple, husband and wife?
So it's a long-term capital gain.
Low-term.
Long-term capital gain varies okay. from 0% to 20%,
oh,
okay.
depending
okay.
on their income, depending on the income tax bracket they fall in. So roughly, and I'm just
yeah.
giving you the rough numbers, not the exact number, if the income is under, less than
yeah.
$85,000, their capital gain tax is zero.
Oh, okay.
If their income is between 85 to 515, and these are, again, not the exact number,
mm-hmm.
then they are in 15% tax bracket. The maximum they could be, let's say if they're making $1 million,
mm-hmm.
the maximum tax bracket is 20% when it comes to long-term capital gain.
Oh, that's not
and only on the excess. So
only
the, so
on
if
the
you,
excess of 500.
Only the excess. So you still get the benefit of that $500,000 cushion. This assuming you get a married couple, but it'd just be if they sell it. They make $700,000 in total gain, the $200,000 excess in that example, which could be taxed as high as up to 20%,
that's
depending
the
on the tax bracket.
So first you take the cost out. Let's say if you bought a home for $300,000, you're selling it for $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
So $300,000 plus $500,000 plus whatever improvements you did, let's say
sure.
that's another $50,000. So your gain is only 150. And the worst case scenario is 20% of that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. Let's turn the topic now to talk about the state withholding tax for residents in New Jersey that sell their principal home and then relocate to another state.
That's a very hot topic,
and there's a lot of confusion yeah. about it. Is
Absolutely.
It a tax really? So withholding, but it's something.
People who don't understand the terminology, they call it exit tax.
Yes.
Right.
A lot of people will refer it as bulk sales tax, tax.
Yeah.
And a lot of people who do it, they call it asset declaration tax. So there are several names to the same thing. Let's understand the concept first. Let's understand the why first. Then it'll be easier to understand how the tax system works.
Mm-hmm.
The reason this rule was created and why the exit tax came in the picture. People were selling their home in New Jersey, moving to Florida or a different state, and there was no way for the state to collect the tax on the gain that they had, especially with the investment property. Forget about the primary home. You have an investment property in New Jersey.
Correct.
You have $100,000 of gain. You got your money. You moved to Florida. Now the state of New Jersey is chasing you. Nobody knows where your address is, and we don't know what to do with it. So the rule was created that at that time of closing, before you move out, before we give money to you, you have to pay your capital gain taxes. And how do I calculate the capital gain taxes? I don't know the whole equation yet.
Sure.
My taxes are not filed. I don't know the income tax bracket. So a state has its own income tax bracket. It goes from 0% to 12%. In most cases, between $50,000 to $500,000 of income, the state income tax rate is 8.9%.
Mm-hmm.
So what a state does, depending on the taxpayer situation, they will try to withhold 8.9%, around 9% taxes at that time of closing. Let's say if you bought a home for $300,000, you sold it for $400,000. So a state will take $9,000 as an advance tax at the time of closing, and we'll call it as exit tax, bulk tax. They will not let the closing happen until you pay $9,000 to the state.
Because the legal process makes sure of that, because they have a forms that go with the deed, and one's
Absolutely.
A residency form, That's one's a non-residency form, and that has, if you're moving out of state, then you have to.
An asset declaration form. They call it.
Yeah.
The rule is, why is it not an extra tax? Why is it not an exit tax? Why we call it an advance tax? At the end of the year, when you file taxes, you put all the numbers in, and if you truly believe the tax liability should have been $5,000, not $9,000, you say $9,000 paid in advance, like estimated taxes that we pay every quarter.
Yes, that's what. Yeah.
It's exactly the same thing. So the state of New Jersey is charging you an estimated taxes at the time of closing based on the expected capital gain that they see. At the end of the year when you file the taxes, you can say that this is the estimated taxes I paid to the state.
Mm-hmm.
And if you paid more than what you should have paid, you can get a refund back.
That's a better name, is advanced tax or estimated tax, but it gets the mislabel of exit tax, and it makes it sound like it's a which is not the correct, which you correctly.
See, I have a client, right? I mean, I told them, you know, consult the accountant, obviously. We're not accountant, but they said they live in this house for 35 years. They're going to Florida retirement. And they've been living here all this time. They didn't declare a Florida residency. No, they've been living here, but they just retired. They want to move completely at the end of the year. So they bought a house for $100,000. So now house sold about, $600,000-$700,000. But minus all the realtor's fee and all the lawyer, whatever, the home inspection, they pretty much is less than $500,000.
Mm.
So they thought they have to pay the exit tax because they... The when you fill in the form, you have to put a new address. It's a Florida address. I said, talk to your accountant. I'm not an accountant.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter where you put it. You put in the Mars and the Moons. I mean,
because
you're leaving
a
here $500,000. Yeah, $500,000 does cover you.
It shouldn't matter. In a principal residence, it shouldn't apply, right?
Well, no, it would not. But the state doesn't know.
The state doesn't know because
they
don't know.
You have to file a form. attesting to the fact that this is where I live, this is where this is the what I purchased it for, this is what I sold it for, and my gain is less than half a million. Yeah. That's why I shouldn't be paying any estimated taxes.
Yeah.
Depending on the attorney to attorney, depending on who you're dealing with, they will still say, no, let's leave 5,000, let's leave 10,000 as an estimated taxes. But again, it's, if you file the taxes at the end of the year, which you will be doing anyway because you are living in the state, if you have to pay something at the time of closing, it's not a bad thing. It's not the end of the day.
Sure.
So you can always get this money back, when you file your taxes.
Right. Yeah, very good stuff. Interesting. So let's talk also about now investment properties, rental properties. Talk about the benefits of owning an investment rental property. We have about 2 minutes left, so we'll just give some of the talk about some of the deductions you can
make. So quickly, in 2 minutes, I want to highlight that a lot of people talk about $10,000 limit when it comes to SALT, state and local taxes. People say property taxes in New Jersey are typically more than $10,000. They can't claim it.
Correct.
But in an investment property, there is no such limit. If for the investment property, if your property tax are $15,000, you are allowed the whole $15,000. The other thing, for your primary home, the mortgage interest is limited to $750,000 of indebtedness. If your loan is more than $750,000, will not give you the full benefit of the interest for your primary home. Mm. For investment property, there is no such limit. So the question that we are typically asked is, what type of expenses can be claimed for an investment property? So I say, close your eyes. Ask yourself, would I have this expense if I did not have this investment property? Mm-hmm. If your answer is yes, then it's not an investment property related expense. If you did not, if you wouldn't have this expense because you don't have the investment property, then it's an investment property related expense. Mm-hmm. So any professional fees, travel to collect the rent, any repair and maintenance and insurance.
Painting, decorating, accounting fees, legal fees.
Absolutely. Anything that relates to this business, consider it as a business. And we also advise a lot of people to have the investment property under the LLC to limit the exposure. Don't try to put it under your name if possible, or in your situation, try to have a holding company, a real estate company, an LLC that's holding the real estate property.
Great. All right. Very, very good summing all that up. AJ, thank you so much. Please give your phone number out there for the listeners that may want to get in touch with you for help during this tax season.
AJ Kumar. I'll be happy to. So again, my phone number is 908-380-6876. This is 908-380-6876.
All right, very good, AJ. Thank you so much again. Please stay tuned for next week when AJ is returning. We're going to talk about 1031 exchanges. Thanks, everyone. Bye
now.
Thank you.
You have been listening to All About Real Estate with Ken and Jane Mueller every Sunday at 10 a.m. on Fox Sports Radio New Jersey and Fox Sports Jersey Shore. For feedback and suggestions, go to their Facebook page, All About Real Estate with Ken and Jane, or email them at realestatewithkenandjane.com, or give them a call at 732-322-2908. That's 732-322-2908.
These messages.